Hey guys, I'm Jen, owner of Hello June Creative, a boutique brand and web design studio. I'm here to help you learn, up-level, and find community in your design business journey. Just remember, the only designer you need to be better than is the one you were yesterday. Hey guys, welcome back to Better the Brand Designer podcast. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Cassidy and Amanda, who are co-founders of Foxtrot Branding. They have been on my list for forever to get onto the podcast because I'm always so curious about how kind of a design partnership functions. And we get into things about flexibility in terms of lifestyle and project management and kind of how they run their business. And how they shifted and added designer education and digital products on top of their one-to-one design services. Here is their bio. Cassidy and Amanda, co-founders of Foxtrot Branding, are a design duo offering strategy-driven branding and web design for lifestyle, apparel, and beauty e-commerce brands. They also offer educational courses, templates, and support to designers starting or growing their own businesses. Enjoy our conversation. Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey Jen. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. All right, go ahead and do like the name and like voice match for our audience.
Yeah, so I am Amanda.
And I'm Cassidy. This is my voice.
Awesome. Okay, we were talking about that before we got on the episode. I was like, people need to know like whose name goes to who. And we don't often do like multiple guest episodes because I think like tons and tons of people can get a little bit chaotic, but you guys are like the dynamic duo. And like, I could not have one on without the other. You know what I mean? So before we dive into our conversation today, you guys know we always do our roses and thorns, and I'm going to skip mine this week because you guys are probably tired of hearing me talk about my new house, which I'm really excited. That's like my rose for like the next like 6 months. So I'll just try to get creative there. But for Cass and Amanda, I would love for you guys to share a rose and a thorn, something good that happened this week, and then something that was kind of a bummer from this week.
Okay, I can go first. My rose is that I'm getting ready to repaint my office and redo my office a little bit because I'm just, you can probably see some of the like the little fillings I've been doing on the walls and stuff, but I'm ready for a change. And I think I'm going to like reposition everything. So I'm excited about that. I'm sick of the blue. I need something different. And then I would say,
what color are you thinking?
You know, I'm going to be boring and just do like a neutral, like off-white. But I feel like for recording like video content, I just need something more neutral. Mm-hmm. Like the previous owners of this house were very into the farmhouse aesthetic, which I love that for them. Just not so much for myself, you know? So I'm ready for a refresh.
Yeah.
It's going to be more on brand, it seems. Like if you're going to do the neutral, that'd be really nice for like just our Foxtrot colors are more like neutral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would say my thorn is just trying to adjust to daylight savings time. I kind of live on the edge of a time zone, so we kind of get like the worst of it. So the sun was like almost down at 4:30 yesterday, which is pretty brutal.
So depressing.
So I'm just doing like a lot of knitting and crocheting projects, trying to like really immerse myself in that. And it is helping, and also going to the gym. So trying to manage that.
Yeah, that's tough. I love the conversation that rolls around every single year when daylight savings time comes. People like are up in arms.
And we're like, oh my God, this has never happened before.
I've never
A week later, the media cycle just continues on to the next thing and nothing ever happens.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Amanda?
Well, okay. So yeah, for mine, my rose this week is I bought a new vacuum yesterday, which sounds really boring, but I was really excited, really needed a new one because I'd moved to a new place too. And I was just like, I just need like a new vacuum for this area with all the hardwood and stuff that's in here. So got that. And that was very exciting for me.
So one of my fun facts about myself is that I love the sound of like the vacuum sucking up like sand and dirt.
Yeah.
Like,
that's it's just pleasing. Satisfying. You just know it's getting the job done. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So that's awesome. And then I guess my thorn is we were talking before this too, and I was like, I cannot even think of what my thorn is. But I think mine that's like not a huge thorn, but just a little one is like we had our last Pro Design Business live call this Monday. And so that was like our last one. So we had to like say goodbye to everyone. Of course, we're still going to stay in touch and like our private communities and stuff with them. But it's always just so much fun getting to see all the designers in our courses and like talk with them about their business and stuff. And so it was a little bit bittersweet, like saying goodbye in our last session this week.
Aw, I know that feeling well where you spend so much time with people that you're mentoring and they definitely become friends, but you know that it's just like not going to be the same afterwards, you know? I mean, sure, your friendships are still going to be there. You'll still be, you'll always be their mentor, but it's like, I was a theater kid in high school, and after a show ends, like you just, your show family just kind of disperses and goes and does their own little thing. And that's, it's a similar
feeling. It's brutal. So everyone is just like sobbing for like the week before it happens. It seems like everyone's dying or something.
And you guys all come back together later.
100% I mean, I think that's a testament to the community building that you guys have done. And, you know, we're going to get into how you guys branched out from offering one-to-one design services to designer education later in the conversation. But, you know, that's kind of like a rose and a thorn, because like you were able to provide such a transformational experience for the students in your program that it was sad when it was ending. So put a little positive spin on it.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. Well, I would love for you guys to just share a little bit about kind of like your journey to where you are today, particularly focusing on the partnership aspect of your design studio, because it's something that we don't see super often. A lot of people are like solopreneurs. And I've heard of, you know, people having partnerships that didn't work out, having a lot of strife there. And so would love to hear kind of like your individual stories, how you met, and then how you kind of decided to start Foxtrot.
Yeah, so I think our story is kind of like just a funny, unique one. And like, we often joke that it's kind of like the rom-com version of like a business startup story. Like, we so I'd always kind of like known of Cassidy, like our families like knew each other, but we didn't really know each other that well. But we both, at the time when we were like in our teens, like we both had blogs and stuff. I remember like following Cassidy's blog. She would do like crafts and projects and things, and I was like, that's so cool, love all her projects. Like, so we like knew of each other from afar, sort of. But then in college, I was in my senior year, and I had a, you know, my my degree is in like art and like graphic design as a focus. And I really wanted to pursue that as a career. And in my senior year, I was like trying to look for jobs, but there really wasn't anything in our small town available. And I was also really just like timid and afraid of like moving to a bigger city, like moving to Nashville, because we're in Tennessee. We're fairly close to Nashville. And that's where like I saw that as the only solution to find a job, was like, I'm gonna have to move away to Nashville. What if that's really hard to find a job? That sounds really scary. And for some reason, the idea of like starting my own business felt less scary. I think that was like a little bit naive of me, but like being in college and being not having like a lot of like pressures or responsibilities on me, and cost of living being pretty low. And I did have help from my parents at that time through college too. So I just, it felt like not that huge of a barrier to jump into starting a business. So I came up with the idea for Foxtrot. And at that same time, I had still been like following Cassidy on her Instagram, and she was posting about how she was doing like web design, I think at that time, and photography. And so I messaged her and asked if we could do like a brand shoot for my business. And then whenever we got together and did the shoot, she was just asking me so many great questions, about my business and like things that I hadn't even thought about yet. Cause like, I was just very much in the startup phases, and like, I didn't know what I didn't know, but Cassidy's family, a lot of them were like entrepreneurs and stuff. Her dad owns a restaurant and all that. So I think she just had like a lot of knowledge in that space that I did not have. And I was just like, hey, you do websites and photography and I do brand design. And like, we're both just kind of freelancing right now. Like, what if we did this together? So I sent her a text and pitched the idea to her like a week after meeting and doing that photo shoot. And we decided to start the business together. So like, after a week of knowing each other officially, we started the business, which is kind of like a crazy, like I said, crazy rom-com story. But it was worked out really well. And I don't think that that would probably work for everybody. I think this is like a very unique situation that we found ourselves in. And it just turns out that like our personalities work really well together. I definitely don't think that's the case with everybody. And like a lot of people do enter partnerships with people that maybe they aren't the most compatible with. And that's where they get into a lot of like issues. And I think we just got really lucky that we do match up really well.
That is the cutest like meet cute story. I love that it was only a week out, you know, and I feel like those big ideas that take hold of us until we tell someone about them, like those are the ones that have longevity in the end. So, and how many years has it been since you guys founded?
Like over 5 years now.
Yeah, we started
5 years and a few months.
2018. Yeah. And I think when we met, like it was just the right timing to do something like this because we both mm-hmm. had so little to lose because we were really privileged to be in just a phase of life where our, like, the cost of living was so low. We were at the point, you know, in our professional development where we were at the end of college. I had graduated and we were just like looking for, you know, whatever our first professional thing was going to be. So it just, it felt like it made sense. And we were able to not have to do too many supporting side gigs while we were starting it up. We had a few going on, but it just was really good timing. Mm-hmm. And then, like Amanda said, we did just end up being very compatible, personality wise. You know, obviously there's still a lot of work you have to put into a partnership. It in many ways mirrors like my marriage. I feel like, you know, it's that type of relationship that mm-hmm. just requires a lot of work. But for me, and I think for Amanda too, it's just completely mm-hmm. worth it to have the support and just like the mm-hmm. The friendship, you know, and just someone in mm-hmm. it with you who understands like no one else really can.
Yeah,
I'm jealous of you guys in a positive way, like hearing you talk about your relationship, because I feel like recently I found that with my employee / friend Lauren, mm-hmm. but like before, I mean, 4 years of kind of doing this on my own, it was really hard to like know whether or not a decision I was making was a good one, or mm-hmm. a design that I made, mm-hmm. if it was straight up garbage or like the best thing I'd ever created. You know, it's hard to know when you're in those like starting phases. So I think that's really cool that you guys have that core relationship that then goes into like a business partnership, because I feel like mm-hmm. you can't have the business partnership without that core connection. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so a follow-up question that I had for you guys, just kind of going off script here, is that like, how do you like divide out responsibility, and do you have like subtitles like within your company?
Mm-hmm. This kind of developed over time. When we first started, we were kind of both just doing everything, and like I think we were both a little bit like insecure about like, what is our brand voice like? Does this email sound like us? Like, are you okay saying this? Mm-hmm. Like, we would like write emails together, and we were also like living in the same place and worked at the same entrepreneur center. We got like a membership there, so we were able to like sit next to each other every day and like work on every task together constantly, because we were both just learning everything. But over time, we kind of started to realize like, who's better at what tasks? What do I enjoy doing more versus what does Cassidy enjoy doing more? And so we've kind of just divvied things up a little bit that way. Cassidy, do you have any more? Like,
yeah, I mean, as far as the client work goes, Amanda is our brand designer and I'm the web design half. That's, we kind of refer to each other as like the different halves of the services we offer. Mm-hmm. So we're different in those ways. But as far as like internal business mm-hmm. stuff goes, I think we've definitely found that Amanda is the role of kind of like the creative vision. Like, she's much more the visionary in the business. I rely on her for the vision for like the aesthetics of the business mainly. I mean, like, I'm an okay graphic designer, but that's definitely like Amanda's strong suit. And when it comes to like creating like visual direction, that's, I'm just not as strong in that as she is. She's really good with original ideas. And I feel like my strength is in implementing and creating plans for how we want to implement it, get it done. So I definitely feel the role of project management for the majority of our projects. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of our client facing communication. I handle like all of our inquiries. So those, we kind of fell into those roles more naturally. And we just do a lot of communication about who's going to do what. And that's kind of one of the, not like drawbacks or cons, but just part of having a partnership. Like, you're going to have to do a lot more talking. You're going to have to do a lot more mm-hmm. communication. And that's going to take extra time and energy. And, you know, there are some days when you maybe don't feel like doing all of that communication, but you have to, like,
Yeah, it's like the decisions that we make, we have to make together, you know, like, right. And that's kind of like what you were talking about earlier with like it feeling somewhat like a marriage. It's like what you say to other people impacts the other person, or like, you know, how you handle client relationships impacts both of us and our reputation as individuals and as a business. So it's like, we'd have to be very considerate of each other, you know, and there's, yeah. So there's just a lot that comes with that. I think there's a little bit more responsibility, but it also is very like so much more support than like just being a solopreneur.
Yeah. And especially
I think we just really enjoy that.
For my personality, I'm someone who it's gotten better as I've gotten older, but I just have a lot of like insecurity about what other people, you know, think of me, especially as like a 21-year-old starting a business. Like, there's a lot of insecurity there. So having someone who can you know, validate what's happening and be like, well, no, actually this person is being unreasonable, or what you said was good, you know, like that has made a big difference for me. And I can't imagine trying to do that all on my own. That would be a lot more emotionally taxing, I think, to not have that person backing you up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why we often tell designers too, that like, if like, I don't think a partnership is right for everybody, but like at least try to find community somewhere and like try to find a group, whether it's like online or in person somewhere, like just have other designers and like business owners you can talk to. Cause it does get kind of lonely if you don't have that. Like, I can't imagine what my days would look like if Cassidy and I didn't get to like touch base every day and like talk about some things. Like, I just feel like I'd feel very alone in like all the decisions I have to make. And so I think it's nice if you can find like a little pocket of community for yourself, of other creatives, of other designers. I definitely think that's like a huge help.
How do you feel like you guys resolve conflict? And I feel like this might be something that would be really helpful for people who might not be in a partnership but are looking to make their first hire, get an intern, like you're not really managing each other, but like when something comes up or someone makes a mistake, like what type of like communication guidance or advice do you have for our audience when it comes to like kind of interpersonal like work relationships within a small studio format?
I think you have to be really intentional with if you're going to bring things up and then how you're going to bring things up, because you definitely have to pick your battles, and you cannot be like having conflict over things that just don't matter. So I think for me, having other people I can talk to about things that maybe don't make sense to like bring up or get into, or just aren't going to be productive. So like having friends, my therapist, that's really helpful. And then I think when we do have things to bring up to each other, you've got to do it. You can't just, you know, let it like sit under the surface forever. If there's something you need to do, that, you know, can feel kind of intimidating to bring it up. And it would be that way with, I think, any kind of team member that you work with. But when you do bring it up, I think it's important not to be accusatory. I think you have to consider what could, all the things that could possibly be going on that could be causing this, and not just assume that, oh, this person is acting this way or doing this thing because they want to be offensive to me, or, you know, they want to be difficult. Like that's not what's happening. They're, you know, they have their reasons. So like, let's assume the best and figure out what's going on so we can talk about it in a productive and like non-accusatory way and find a way forward.
Yeah. And I think just like being curious, like you said, versus like accusatory, like being like, we'll ask each other questions like, hey, did you mean to do that? Or, hey, what did you mean by that? Or like clarify this or whatever. Or like, if we have something big that we need to discuss, we'll like schedule it on the calendar. We're like, we need to have a meeting and talk about this topic. And that way everyone's just kind of like in the right headspace for that and like ready to discuss, versus like, I mean, sometimes we will just shoot each other like a message about something that we need to talk about. But if it's like a big thing, we'll try to like schedule a meeting for it.
I think using voice memos is helpful. And I mean, that goes for like client relationships as well. That's something we talk about a lot when we're mentoring designers, is that sometimes you get to a point in a project where things just feel tense between you and the client, and you need to get on a call and you need to hear each other's voices and let them know that you're on their team. Because I think in writing, the tone just gets completely lost sometimes. So I'm not afraid of a smiley face with a client, you know, like I want them to know that I'm not, you know, upset with them or anything. Like, you know, we're just needing to speak directly.
Yeah.
When I write emails, I used to be really self-conscious about the number of exclamation points that I would use. Like, I'm talking every sentence. I've since, you know, it's not every sentence now, but like, I don't really worry about that too much, because when other people communicate that way with me, that makes me like understand their intention and just feel really good and positive. Because I have had client situations recently where, you know, I was following up to receive feedback or clarifying about something that didn't make sense when a client provided feedback, and had the client not understand my intention in that email and, you know, think that I was mad that they were asking for feedback, which I wasn't, you know. So I think that is the best advice, is to like face to face on a video call if you can, like, or a phone call if you like can't do video. I think diffuses the tension in like difficult client situations. And recently I've been doing like voice notes with my clients. Like if client uses Voxer, like I will be like, hey, like add me on Voxer. And the clients have been like, oh, are you sure? Like that doesn't push a boundary. I was like, no, like, you know, this is going to be helpful. And it makes me feel less anxious too, if like they're able to ask a quick question and I'm able to get back to them really fast. That's just like kind of my vibe, and I see that.
Well, how impressive that your clients are like asking and making sure that doesn't push your boundaries, because that means that you're setting up really good boundaries from the beginning with your clients.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and it wasn't always that way, you know, like that has definitely been something that I've added to the beginning of my process, to my contract, my onboarding, to my emails, client portal, like, and I reiterated a lot. And, you know, something even that's happening with Hello June right now is that we are struggling a little bit with clients not providing feedback on time, which is like the age old like issue that brand designers and web designers experience. And rather than me thinking like, oh, this client doesn't respect me, or this client doesn't take me seriously, or they don't, you know, they don't like my timeline or whatever, like I'm thinking to myself, okay, what is something that I could have done differently that would help the client provide their feedback in a more timely way? And I'm taking notes on my process throughout every single client project that I do, so that I can adjust my timeline, so that I can lengthen out the QA process of web design, which is a really big kind of thorn in our side right now, is that I'm not giving our team enough time for QA and testing. But like, you know, I'm always thinking about like, and I think that's like a leadership thing. I'm thinking about how can I provide a better client experience, and how can I help the client avoid these things that are slightly annoying to us as a studio? Whereas I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, I would be like, oh, this is like such a toxic client, or like this client doesn't respect like me, blaming, or whatever, you know? Yeah, like blaming, exactly. So like you guys were saying, like when with interpersonal stuff, shifting from accusation, blame, et cetera, to curiosity. Like one of my favorite phrases when I'm talking about client communication is like, help me understand. And that you can use that with your partner, with your best friend, with your kid, you know, rather than like, why did you do this? It's like, okay, help me understand, you know, the decision-making process when you did XYZ, or with a brand strategy, like help me understand why you chose this particular image to add to your Pinterest board when we're trying to go for a fun, playful vibe. So anyways, that's a whole other podcast episode, but I loved what you guys said about kind of like resolving conflict.
Yeah, no. And so, I think everything you said too is like great advice for anyone. And like, we try to do that too with our clients. And I think it's, it is just really helpful to have that like open communication and assume the best and ask questions.
Yes, absolutely. So let's shift gears for a second and talk a little bit more about this flexible lifestyle that you guys lead, spending time offline, you're still growing a really streamlined and efficient business. Why is that something that you guys are both passionate about, and how does this actually manifest in the day-to-day of the operations of Foxtrot?
I think we kind of always had the vision that we wanted to freelance, you know, going back to like when we were thinking about starting this business, we always felt really passionate about doing something more flexible. I never saw myself really entering like the corporate world right away, at least. I don't know. I think I had this entrepreneurial bug in me that was like, I have these like talents and this work ethic. Surely there's something I can do that would allow me to do something that I like, I'm actually enjoying every day, and just have a lot of flexibility around. I think I probably got a lot of that from my family. Like I am really lucky to have parents who just really empowered the heck out of me and were like, if you want to do something, go for it. And I've always been like just a little bit, I think, unique, because I grew up homeschooled. Me and Amanda were joking about that before this podcast. Yeah. But I think that just, you know, that had its pros and its cons, but that helped me feel confident to do things a little bit differently than everyone else and be okay with that. And part of that was wanting to do something that would give me the flexibility to hopefully not have to work like a crazy amount of hours and be able to spend time doing things I love. And as we started our business, I, you know, you have that like startup energy and you just want to pour all of your time into it. And then you kind of hit that like 6 month marker, you know, however long, and it kind of wears off a little bit and you're like, okay, so this is a job, this is work, you know, it kind of sinks in for you. And I started to realize that even though I'm doing something that I really enjoy, I equally value having a true work-life balance and having time to spend time with my friends and family, travel if I want to, and just have the time off. Like that really is the reason I want to do my business, so that I can have that time. You know, I'm not really in it to work 24/7 and to hustle and build this like startup I can sell or something. We wanted a lifestyle business, really. So that was kind of my motivation for always making sure we are creating a flexible schedule and business that can support the things we want to do. Would you say your perspective is similar, Amanda?
Yeah, I think so. And kind of what that looks like in our studio's like schedule now, I guess, is so like we do work, you know, like Monday through Friday. We work like typical hours, like 9:30 to 5:30 or 10:30 to 5:30, whatever. We're both in different time zones too, so that's why I'm saying a lot of different numbers right now. But because we live in different towns now since I moved. But so we work a typical schedule. There was a phase where we were taking half Fridays off, which was awesome, and I kind of want to get back to doing that. We've just been in a really busy phase of our business right now. So I think that's just like a big thing for us is like everything's kind of like up and down. It kind of like changes and we just kind of go with the flow. Since we've been in a really busy phase in our business, we are opting to work a little bit extra. But I would love to get back to taking those Fridays off. And then we do really try hard to like build in at the start of every year, build in our breaks for the year. So we always love to take like a 3-week summer break and then a 3-week winter break. And then occasionally we'll do like longer weekends here and there if we like have anything that comes up that we want to go do. Or I personally really love like spontaneously booking a trip if like something comes up, or I want to go on a weekend trip with friends or whatever it is. Like I really like having that flexibility because I just feel like I want this business to support my life. I don't want to just work all the time. And I feel like if I'm putting in all this effort to build my own business, then like I want it to benefit me, and the way that makes me happiest is like having time off to experience life and travel and go do fun things with friends and family, like Cassidy was saying too. So I think having those like 3 week set breaks in the winter and the summer is so nice for us. And usually by the time that rolls around, we're both like exhausted and like ready for a break because we do just like go really hard during the times when we are working. So we're just like extra ready for that break when it comes around.
Yeah. If we didn't have those breaks, those two specific ones scheduled out, I'm not sure we would still be running our business, at least at the capacity that we are, because by the time those breaks roll around, typically we are on the verge of burnout. Not always, but sometimes if, you know, we've had like a really intense course launch and client load at the same time, by the time we hit summer, it's like we really need the break to just be able to fully mm-hmm. step away from work. And I think the extended break is important because a week just typically isn't going to be enough for us to fully be able to step away and like forget about it. We always joke that by the time we come back mm-hmm. from our break, we're like, how do we run this business again? What's happening? But mm-hmm. like, I love that because I come back and I have new ideas and a fresh perspective that I could not get if I didn't take that extended type of break.
That's such a good point too, because I feel like our best ideas and like whenever I've come up with like course plans has been like when I took like a total break for like a couple weeks, and then I would be like, boom, I have this like great idea, and then I want to journal it all out and write like create this whole plan when we come back, and I get really excited. And so like, but that doesn't happen unless I have like that space. And I think there's like that quote or something that's like creatives need time to sit and just like do nothing. Like I think that is like a real thing. Like I need time to sit and do nothing or do something else creative that's not like for a client. Like so much of what makes me happy is being creative, and I want to be able to do that for myself too. And so I don't always have the energy for that when I am working and have a heavy client load. So whenever we do take those breaks, I'm able to like fulfill myself in other ways creatively, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Two things that really stood out to me when you guys were kind of answering this question. One, I love the extended breaks. I take a month off every summer and I take 3 weeks off at the end of the year. And that extended nice. Time, mm-hmm. like 1 week, by the end of that first week, then I'm fully like unwound.
Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah, it takes a while to unwind.
It takes so long. Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I always joke that, so I take Fridays off, and I joke that mm-hmm. I'm not fully on weekend mode until like Saturday morning, because mm-hmm. all day Friday I'm like transitioning from this like really intense, like I work like you guys really, really hard when you are working, and then you just gotta rest. And you know, some people are not like that. Some people prefer to just kind of be steady and then just have like a kind of like a 2 day, you know, whatever, just a day off, and they like to work on a Saturday or whatever. But like, I feel like y'all and me, we go so hard because we're so passionate about it. And then we just like I want to be in my bed all day, right. Which
yeah,
is
like
not
I want to go do anything else.
Season of life. Yeah, of course. So that's the first thing I just like wanted to highlight and say, yes, 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 me too. But mm-hmm. the second thing is that I love that you guys mentioned that you're in a busy season right now and you are intentionally crafting your hours around that busy season. And I don't think this is something that's talked about enough in our industry because, yes, everyone talks about the limited hour work week and the 3-day weekend and the time off, which is so important. And it's important to craft your schedule, your business schedule around your lifestyle for sure. But then we kind of ignore, like, what if things get really busy? Like, what if you have opportunities that you don't want to say no to? Mm-hmm. Like, we're always like, oh, well, just say no. And then your schedule is like king and you got to make sure that you have that time to expand and create and stuff. But like, you can intentionally choose, like, I can intentionally choose to take on additional work knowing that I'm going to have to work after bedtime, which I don't love. Mm-hmm. But when the opportunity and the money presents itself and I am able to make that choice, mm-hmm. and sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no, that choice is freedom. That choice is flexibility. Even if that looks like I'm working after hours. Like, I used to be like self-conscious about like posting to my Instagram story about like, hey, look at this design I'm working on at like 9 p.m. Because I'm like, oh my goodness, like I talk about like freedom and flexibility and limited hour work week. Like, people are going to think that I'm like staying up all night designing, which I definitely am not doing, you know, like, but I think it's just that flexibility can look so different for people in different seasons. And like, not a single season in my business has looked like a previous season. So I love that you guys highlighted that.
And sometimes they're...
Yeah, and I'm sure things... Oh, I was going to say, I'm sure things change when you had kids too. Like, that probably impacts things a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm living in the upside down. That's how much it impacts things.
And sure. Sometimes there are seasons where there are variables that are out of your control. Sometimes the economy is going to tank. You know, sometimes maybe you're going to lose a really big client contract that you didn't think you would. There are some things that are just truly going to be out of your control, and sometimes you are going to have to change what flexible used to look like to what it's going to look like now. Like, unfortunately, we just can't control every little thing, but we can control how we respond to it and make, you know, just pivot, I guess, would be the word to kind of make your flexibility look different for that time. And, you know, for us right now, like Amanda was saying, like, we would love to get back to taking half day Fridays, or if we can take a long weekend, you know, once a month or something when we can get there. But sometimes when you have a business, that's just how things go, and you just have to roll with it.
Absolutely. I would love to talk about digital products for a second and designer education, because I feel like one of the things that you guys have done really well with your positioning is, like, when I think about Foxtrot, I think about really good templates. And that has everything to do with your marketing and just the talk in the design industry of like seeing Facebook groups. Oh, I'm looking for a really good strategy template or onboarding or whatever. People are always like, you got to check out Foxtrot. Like, you know, and I feel like I see your guys' name like everywhere, which is just a testament to not only the marketing presence that you have in your positioning, but also the quality of your products. And so I'm curious to hear a little bit more about when designer education and digital products started coming up for you guys, at what point in your business, because I know that we have a lot of designers curious about passive income, digital products. Passive income, digital products, not really something that I have explored yet. And so I'm curious as well how that came up, and then like what the conversations were around that and how you landed on the structure that you have today, and if there's anything else that's in the works for the future.
I think we knew pretty early that we wanted to eventually get into education when we were like ready for that. Something that both of us have just always enjoyed is just like learning and like teaching and all of that. As a kid, I always wanted to be like either a teacher or an artist. And so in a way, we kind of get to like, I get to do both of those things now. And so we started with freebies. We knew that we wanted to like grow our audience. We specifically wanted to do like education for designers. So we just started with like free templates. And those just did really well. And so that was able, like, that was how we were able to build up that audience and like get people on our email list. That way, whenever we did want to eventually like launch our first thing, we had people there who were ready and who we knew were like interested in that from us. So we did that for how long, Cassidy? How long did we do just like freebies?
Probably around a year.
Okay. And we started that, I guess, like a little after, like a year into our business, I think. Yeah. So we did that for a year or so, built up that audience. Around that time too, I think we were like on TikTok and stuff, got a lot of people like interested in our freebies through TikTok. So that really helped us build up our email list to like a couple thousand people. And so whenever we did decide that we were like, okay, we officially want to like dive into building our first course, we did that in 2020. Is that right? Like our first course was Pro Design Process. And that was basically teaching like our entire business process and everything, like just like everything we've learned over the years, like bundled up in one big course and coaching program. And we had a way better launch than we expected. I think our goal was like, I mean, I think it was a very, I don't even know what our goal was, but it was like a fraction of what actually we got. We had like over like a, how many students enrolled?
Do you remember? Probably close to like
that first run.
100 the first time.
It was like over 100, over 100 students. I think we were expecting like, we were expecting like just a few, and we got over 100 students. And we had no idea that we had that great of an audience like ready to learn from us. So that was really exciting.
Yeah. And all of the factors just like aligned perfectly. A lot of people were just interested in that exact content at that time. You know, the first time you launch a course, and especially for your first course ever, it's going to be the best turnout. That's just typically how that goes, because you have the audience waiting for it. I think the pricing was right on it. And everything just aligned really, really well for us to be doing that. And I think we organically built that audience kind of unintentionally too, because I mean, we were just posting about our client work and our process, and we weren't even trying to market to other designers early on, and other designers were just following because they were interested just seeing how the behind the scenes of our process was working. So we kind of just naturally built that up. And that's still, I think, like a core tenet of us attracting both designers and clients today, because designers enjoy seeing the type of work that we post, seeing the type of clients we're working with, and like the behind the scenes process. So in that way, our platform and our content kind of attracts both clients and designers organically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that you mentioned just now that I see people go awry with when they're starting to venture out into digital products, that you guys did the right way, is that you started audience building prior to launching. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a no-brainer, but I think we see a lot of designers feel the pressure of like low leads, or like not a lot of like client inquiries coming in, or like low pricing or whatever that looks like, or they're getting a lot of pricing pushback and they think, okay, I need to make a lower priced offer and make it templatized, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't have that type of audience to be able to sell at volume that would pay them back for the hours spent creating the digital product. Mm-hmm. So coming from someone who does not do digital products, I do not consider myself an expert at all. That is the first thing that I would probably recommend if someone is like wanting to go out and do that. And that, I'm glad that you guys mentioned that. I think that audience building is, I don't want to say like it's a lost art, but it's something that people try to fast track. And I don't think that you can really fast track the trust and the, you know, the like, no trust factor that you do when you consistently show up to give away free and high quality resources to people in exchange for a relationship with them. And like you said, launching that new course into that audience, you sold out times 10, which is congratulations. That's awesome. So I think that that is just a really important thing that you guys did organically. And I think it was a smart decision to think, okay, in the future, we want to start offering designer education. How can we start building that audience so we've got a warm group of people who are like jumping to buy from us? Was that like really intentional that you guys did that, or was it just more like we like to share? Because that's it was not intentional for me. I didn't really think I wanted to do designer education for, well, obviously the podcast, but like my first paid offer, Design Mini Mind, which we just launched and sold out the second cohort of it, which is just absolutely insane. After a week, I planned 3 weeks for the launch period, but it sold out in like 5 days, which was insane.
Awesome.
I mean, it was small, it was only like 8 people, but like I just loved doing like close friend stories and like, this is what I'm working on, and like my email list and stuff. And I just made content just for the joy of it. So like, was that kind of like where you guys were at, or were you more like strategic and like kind of thinking ahead? Like, okay, we want to launch something into this that we're creating.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, like we wouldn't have done it if we didn't enjoy doing it. So I think just like we wanted to share, and we just like had so many people asking us questions, like Cassidy was saying, like just like sending us DMs and asking us how we do things or how we set that up or whatever. Like, why don't we just share it? But like I said, we did also know that we wanted to eventually maybe do education, but we just knew we weren't there yet in our business because we were still fairly new. I don't think we knew maybe what that education was going to look like yet. Like, I don't think we were thinking, you know, a year or so ahead of like what that exactly was going to be yet. Until we got closer to that time. But just like, I think just like, it is important to like see what you're inspired by in business and like try to pursue that and like see what comes out of that, you know, like by pursuing this interest in sharing education. And even if it's just free education, like that took us further down that road of like creating, you know, paid courses and communities and all that. So I think it's just important to like pay attention to that in yourself.
Yeah. And that you, like you were saying, Jen, you cannot rush that phase of growing the audience and building that connection with them. Mm-hmm. We have an example of trying to sell a digital product that we did not have an audience for. We thought early on, let's try making some pre-made brand kits, because like you were mm-hmm. saying, we had that thought, well, it does seem like a lot of people can't afford us, so maybe they would want to buy a pre-made brand kit. But we just had zero audience for that. I don't think we ever sold even one of those.
No.
Because,
well, they're just so niche too, and it was like, who, you're gonna have to like show this to like thousands of people to find the right people who are maybe interested in this, who also know that they want like a pre-made kit versus something custom. Like, it's just such a niche audience. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't have those people.
I think we were thinking of it as a downsell to our current audience, when in reality it was just, that would have been for a completely different audience that we didn't have mm-hmm. at all. So that was an example yeah. of when we were like, oh, well, that's disappointing and kind of embarrassing mm-hmm. that we didn't sell one. But let's just take that data and, you know, moving forward, if we ever do any digital products, make sure we have the audience there for it. And we just organically were already building that designer audience. And I think we mm-hmm. have tried to be pretty intentional about not creating products or programs that are ahead of where we are in business or offer something that we haven't had experience in yet. You know, like I think we've tried to keep it organic to where we are and the knowledge that we have, knowing that, you know, like we started our business pretty young and, you know, we had a lot of experience to gain and we still have a lot of experience to gain. But at the same time, since there have been two of us and we are really consistent with improving our process after every single client and always like trying to make it better, I think that's a bit part of what has helped us grow as quickly as we did and also help us have other tools and philosophies and ideas that other designers could benefit from when they are just starting up, you know, stuff that we didn't know until our second, third, fourth, now fifth year, and be able to pass that on.
Yeah, I think that there's just a humility that I see from you guys that is really refreshing in the business education space, because I mean, we've seen it not just in design, but like in other industries, coaching, courses, you know, like people are saying, oh, when is the market going to get saturated? And when are people going to turn to the next thing? Like, what's the next like course, like mm-hmm. trend going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, I really admire and strive to do this as well, you know, in my own business, to be very transparent about where I'm at in business and what I've achieved and not promise outcomes or, you know, mm-hmm. like I just talked about, I don't sell digital products. And when people ask me, does your course cover any of that? Can you help me with that? I say, no, that's not in the program. Mm-hmm. And so if that's a goal of yours, then I don't think that your money would be well spent in working with me. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, that just in turn grows that trust factor when you're open and honest about like, hey, we had this launch that didn't go well, but we learned this amazing, mm-hmm. valuable thing. And now like we can share, like you guys can educate on that. And so mm-hmm. it ended up being a valuable experience for you guys. So that's just something that I wanted to call out that I think is really unique and that I really admire.
Yeah, we definitely don't try to be anything we're not. And I think we also try to like always acknowledge whatever privilege or specific circumstances that we've had that have brought us to this place and acknowledge that that's going to be really different from most other people because we all come from unique backgrounds. We're all starting design businesses at different phases in our life. Most people that we mentor or talk to are not like we were in 21 years old, fresh out of college, starting mm-hmm. a design business. So many of you guys are going to be stay-at-home moms, or you have a corporate job and you're trying to pivot and figure out, like, you know, how, when it's time to go full-time with your design business, how you can cut your work hours down to try to, you know, go full-time with your business. So we're all going to be coming from these different backgrounds, and we don't want to say, like, you know, everyone's going to be just like us, because you're not. So let's figure mm-hmm. out how you can implement the strategies and philosophies that we have into your personal and unique situation. And we're not going to give you like a copy and paste. We're going to try and make it work for whatever, wherever you're at right now and whatever your personal goals are. If your personal goal is a 20K month, awesome. But if your personal goal is to just start making, I don't know, like between 2 and 5K a month, awesome. Let's see how, you know, we can help you get there. And support whatever you want your life to look like.
I think that, you know, ties everything up so perfectly in our conversation kind of about that flexible lifestyle, about coaching, et cetera. If you could leave our audience with like one piece of advice, if they're wanting to build a business in pursuit of the type of lifestyle and the flexibility and freedom that you guys have, like what's one thing that you would want people walking away from this episode to remember?
I think I would say, prioritize the things that are really important to you. So for a lot of us, that's going to be time off. So prioritize that from the very beginning of your year. Mark those spots in your calendar and hold those boundaries to the best of your ability. Otherwise, those priorities will get trampled over if you don't try to hold them from the beginning. So, I mean, as realistically as you can, because I know in startup years, you're just doing everything you can to make an income that you can live off of. But there are going to be ways that you can at least protect your weekends. You know, try to start taking a long weekend once a month and work your way up to getting to whatever that, for example, time off, what you want that to look like. And then that would also flow into how you want to price your services or your products or whatever you're creating. Always start with that knowledge that this is what I want it to look like. Cast that vision and let your scheduling and your pricing kind of fall around that to the best of your ability. So you're always working towards those goals that you have for whatever you want your flexibility to look like.
I think we always preach like know your numbers, and because I think that just really helps influence your decisions a lot in business. And if you don't know your numbers, you're not going to know how much you need to be working, how many clients you need to be taking on, what to price them at. And so we always recommend doing a calculation to get like your base price. We have that in one of our freebies. Can we shout that out now, or would you prefer to shout that out at
the end? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a freebie called Launch Your Business in 6 Weeks. And that's like a really great kind of like 6 week guide and checklist to help you like figure out what are your basic steps you have to do to get like your name set up, your legal stuff set up, your finances, how much do you want to price your projects? How many projects could you be doing in a year? So it's just a really great free guide. Maybe Cassidy can come in and tell me what the link is for that, but
yeah,
I'll make sure that it's in the show notes or in case anyone notes. Wants to, cool. to go mm-hmm. and grab that. And I guess that's a good opportunity for you guys to share all of your social links if you wanted to kind of go into that, because I'm sure you have a ton more freebies where that one came from.
Oh, yeah. We've got a couple on our site. We've got like a whole page with education, so like free blog posts and free guides and downloads and things like that. You can find all the information at foxtrotbranding.com. You can also find us on Instagram at foxtrotbranding. We're also both on TikTok. We have different accounts. So like I share a lot about brand design on mine, and that's at amanda.foxtrot. And then Cassidy shares a lot about web design and her advice in that whole realm at cassidy.foxtrot.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. So we always do we don't always do an inbox question, but today we're definitely going to do an inbox question. Listener Stevie Moval asks, how do you break into a new niche? I have a steady clientele from a specific industry, and I would like to shift into different industries, but don't really know how to make the jump without having all of the contacts. What do you guys think?
I think it's kind of maybe not a quick jump. It's maybe like a slow transition. I think the biggest thing is you have to start like talking about it and educating people and like, this is my niche, like change your messaging on your social media accounts, like in your bio, whatever your like bio message says, change it on your website. Like if you're opening up to new industries, you know, you might want to make sure you're including the right terminology, the right keywords for that. So people will see that and know, okay, this person is like, they are a great fit for my business, you know? So I think that's the first thing to do. So that's totally outside of like actually finding those contacts, but just like starting to get it out there, starting to tell people that this is what you do now.
I would also say if you don't have any portfolio work that reflects that, you definitely need to make some personal projects to show people mm-hmm. your capabilities and your style for that specific industry. That's going to be one of the top factors in attracting that new clientele. So you definitely need update your messaging across all of your platforms, and then definitely have those portfolio projects so people can view them. And then you're probably going to have to do some of that work you did at the beginning of starting your business of making those connections. So I would do a lot of networking on social media, a lot of trying to connect with those potential clients. And it's always the hardest at the beginning making those connections. But once you make them, it will start snowballing because they will start telling their connections about it. You'll have more work mm-hmm. and it will kind of just become this bigger snowball and get a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. For sure. One of the little tricks that I've done recently with Hello June is that I have snuck into like niche Facebook groups, like Facebook groups mm-hmm. for interior designers or Facebook groups for fine artists. I've made connections with coaches for fine artists or people who do marketing for interior design specifically and reached out and asked, hey, how can we collaborate? Like, let's do an IG live together. Let's do an email swap. And I've gotten inquiries, clients, like new people who never would have found me before by doing like being proactive and kind of like doing those types of things. And guys in those Facebook groups, like talking to the listeners here, like you will, there's so much great messaging and copy and content idea inspiration in those groups because people just constantly post about their pain points. Like if you're curious about what your clients' pain points are, go and look into a private Facebook group. You know, don't like lie your way in, you know, and you might get rejected. But like, I have found like so much great info about like what interior designers are struggling with and like their pricing and like their, you know, the things that their clients like reject them for and stuff like that. And I've been able to get some great marketing, just copy inspiration
That's
from
so
those
smart.
Things. So
yeah, that is genius.
You can sneak your way in and just take screenshots and like, you know, save things and use that for content inspo, because we can sit and think all we want about what our ideal client like thinks, and we can ask our current clients and stuff, but until you know get some good data and see the same types of questions popping up from people, like that's when you know, like, okay, I gotta write a line about this in my FAQ, or I've got to make a reel about this or something.
Well,
like that.
That's so smart, because when you as a business, you know, whatever kind of business you have, when you're looking for a service provider, it feels so overwhelming to know where to even start. So whoever is just in your community and in front of you and seems trustworthy, that's probably the person you're going to go with. So if you as a designer can just get in front of those people organically, you're very likely going to be the first person they think of.
And we've gotten a lot of clients from Facebook groups too. I've never thought to do that where we like you look for a very specific group, but we've joined just general like women entrepreneur groups. And a lot of times they'll be asking like, hey, I'm looking for a web designer, a brand designer, and I'll just type in our info, you know, and like we've gotten clients through that. So that's like what you're doing is even smarter, because you're like going exactly for like who you're really interested in and like not like marketing yourself necessarily, but if people are asking, you're there and you can drop your name, which is great.
Yeah, people, you know, and I think the key that you mentioned, Cass, is organically. That word, you know, like my whole marketing philosophy without getting too into the weeds is to make friends first. Super easy. Just make friends with people, just without any expectation of anything in return. And that has been the strategy that has grown my studio to the place that it is, that has attracted the type of clients that I get to work with, and has, you know, really weeded out for the most part the types of clients that aren't going to value me or my services or want to pay my rates. And so, like you said, it's not like I'm going in there and joining a group cold, not reading anything, and then making like a self promo post, because that gives us all the ick. Okay. But
yeah, and that's usually against the rules too in this.
And
groups.
It is. Your post is going to get deleted for sure. Yeah. No one's going to see it. But like, it's when someone asks, like, I like, what type of questions should I be putting in my like contact form on my website? It's like, I would love to I wrote a blog post about this, drop link. I also am a web designer that specializes in work with an interior designer. So if you have any questions at all, send me a voice note on Instagram. See, like, that's awesome, is just so much more organic than like, I think people think of Facebook groups as this like toxic self-promo, like just mishmash, which it can be for sure. Some groups are not like, are very poorly like managed by their admins, but there is a lot of opportunity, like you said, to just connect with people in an organic way without any expectation of like return. Because even if that person that you're commenting on isn't interested in your services, who knows what type of people are creeping on those comments, like we all do in Facebook groups. I spend 99% of my time reading other people's comments and not making my own comments. So,
and who knows how far in the future that's going to pay off. I think that's like one thing when either you're trying to get clients or you're shifting into a new clientele, we often feel like disappointed if it doesn't pay off immediately. But that person could have seen you comment on that, and then a year later, they're ready for your services and they come back to you. You just don't know when that's going to pay off in the future.
Yeah. Getting those people into your pipeline, educating them with quality content, connecting them with them organically in the DMs, making friendships with people via Instagram. I mean, a year, 2 years, just like you said, Cass, like in the future, I've had people say, I have been following you for 3 years. And I've always known that I wanted to work with you. And I've got the cash flow now. And they're not inquiring with any other designer. Like they want to work with Hello June, you know? And so, you know, the seeds that you sow now in this season are going to be the ones that pay off in those, like, that's what everyone, like everyone's consistent leads, right? Everyone's consistent client inquiries, which I think is a bit of a pipe dream. I don't think there's anything consistent about the way that clients act or inquire. You know, I'm very transparent and straightforward about the fact that I see a lot of like waves of like inquiries and then dry seasons and stuff like that. But, you know, if you shut down and you don't outreach and you don't make those connections with people, then you're losing out on future opportunities, like you said, Cass. Exactly. So I think this, all of this is just, you know, a great conversation that we can make a whole podcast episode about. Stevie, please let us know if this was helpful and if you have any follow-up questions for Amanda or Cass about this. And also anyone else who is curious about, you know, their content, go follow them on TikTok, Instagram. I don't make TikTok content and I don't like follow a ton of people. I just browse the For You page, but I'm definitely going to be going and following you guys because I feel like I'm not on that part of TikTok that like feeds me like brand and web design content. I'm on like clean talk.
To be honest, like, I'm not either.
Nice, yeah.
I don't do a whole lot of like consuming other people's business content just because like if I'm on TikTok, I want to have fun. But, you know, of course, the content I post is business related. So I understand.
Yeah, well, we're friends now. So it'll be like catching up with you. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you guys again so much for joining me today. This was so wonderful and such a unique perspective from a duo partnership. And I loved our conversations around like lifestyle, flexibility. Those are just things that I find myself constantly gravitating back to because like you said, why would you not explore what that looks like for you when you have the opportunity to as someone who owns their own business? And that's why people get into this business in the first place. So really appreciate your time. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having
us. Thank you, Jen. This was a great time.
Of course. All right. Well, we'll see you guys in next week's episode. Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Leave a review, join our free Facebook community, and share the pod with your designer friends so that they can join the fun. Give me a shout on Instagram at Better Podcast if you want to submit an inbox question, and visit the pod at betterbranddesigner.com to learn more and snag discounts on my favorite resources. See you next week.